Chapter 11
Hosred, I huffed, when the large slothman moved so he wasn't so backlit by the late afternoon sun, and I could actually make out the imposing figure standing over us was, in fact, Hosred of the Akoba, and not some hungry beast. Well, considering how awful of a cook he was, maybe he was hungry, but that was neither here nor there.
Hello,
the giant of a man droned politely, as Zoe scrambled up from her compromising and half-indecent position in my lap. His smirk was proof he was actually enjoying my embarrassment, the asshole, and I made sure to subtly adjust my crotch so any evidence of my warm reunion with Zoe wasn't obvious before I stood up.
You know, for a great big guy, you move like a freaking ninja, I complained, even though I still held my hand out for him to shake.
We should put something noisy on you, like tin cans around your ankles or tambourine bracelets. Ozzy laughed in his snaky laugh that was all air and teeth. And I grinned even when he rattled my whole arm with his greeting. Where have you been, pal? I asked, after I was allowed to take my arm back.
I'd ask you the same, he responded, and cocked his big head at Zoe.
Yeah, I've been told we've been gone a lot longer than we planned to be, I said, and tugged the suddenly shy catwoman closer. This is my first wife, Zoe. Zoe, this is Arvid's brother, Ozzy.
Nice to meet you,
she replied and smiled kindly despite the pink on her face that had yet to fade.
Came to give you...
The big guy trailed off as he reached for the large leather satchel slung across his barrel chest. He rummaged around for something for a beat, and then he made a noise like he'd found something and brandished his palm for me. There, in the center, was a familiar circular trinket I had on me when I fell from the airship with Rylan. It was the strange calcified ring I'd taken from the worm beast back on Terre. After I'd collected its skin for my airship sails, I'd also taken this scaled ring from its eye socket. At the time, I thought the natural pattern was interesting, and the material had to be useful somehow. So after I was rescued by the Akoba forest folk, I'd idly asked if someone could transform the thing into something as practical as it was beautiful, so I could give it to Amaya when I had the chance. After all, the token of affection she'd bestowed upon me was a bracelet with a goba nut threaded through it, and the magical little nut was probably the only thing that gave me the energy I needed to get Ryan and I to safety after we'd crash-landed. Now the simple ring of worm husk was polished to a high shine, similar to a tumbled tiger's eye crystal. And when I looked closer, I could see a few mechanical additions had been fashioned, like a delicate hinge and a decorative brass clasp.
Wow, did you do this, Ozzy? I asked, as I picked up the beautiful piece.
Now that it had a clasp, I could see how it could be operated as a cuff that would be perfect for the Oryx woman's upper arm, and it would look stunning against her pale skin.
Yes, he said with a swaying nod. Practical, you said. Useful.
That's right, I said.
Unbreakable, he said, and mimed clasping the cuff shut. Hidden blade.
Really? I asked, and then snapped the cuff open so I could try to see what he was talking about. Behind the clasp piece, there was a small catch, and when pressed inward, the brass clasp became the hilt of a small 1-inch dagger someone could hold between their knuckles. With practice, it could very well be used to add a deadly yet effective edge to a well-placed jab or two, and it was perfect for what I wanted it to be and more.
You like?
He drawled.
I love it, man, I said. It's beyond what I could have imagined.
You're the best, and I hope you'll say yes to the invitation to come back with us and at least have dinner. That way you can have some of Arvid's cooking before we head out on our way. The slothman said, and tapped his scruffy goatee with one long claw.
Ozzy!
Nova butted in with an impatient whine.
Say yes!
Shh,
Okay,
he chuckled and grinned down at the oddly clothed siren woman. I had to bite my lip to stop myself from laughing out loud, and when I glanced at Zoe, I could tell she was holding back her amusement as well, because her expression was entirely too innocent to be believed. Because while Zoe and I were having our mini-reunion, Nova had been constructing her own outfit from the articles of clothing she'd managed to come across. The ensemble she'd apparently settled on, of course, included the skirt on her head and her sock gloves, but now she'd added things like Zoe's blue star-spangled headscarf as a sarong around her body and a pair of Shay's riding trousers tied around her like a cape. It made the little sea sprite look even more endearing, and I honestly didn't have the heart to change a thing. Zoe seemed to share my opinion for the most part, except when it came to the glove socks, and before the siren woman even knew what was happening, my wife had slipped both of them off at the same time.
Hey!
Nova said with an outraged scowl on her slim face, and tried to take them back, but all Zoe had to do was hold them above her head. The height difference between them forced the siren to have to jump to reach, and even then she was no match. Zoe gave the little siren a very unimpressed look and then made an impatient chittering noise at her.
Sit down.
The catwoman snapped her fingers twice and pointed to a piece of driftwood that would act as a perfect bench, and Nova meekly sat like Zoe ordered. Ozzy and I watched patiently as Zoe then rolled the socks onto Nova's battered feet where they were intended to be, and it was worth the time it took to see the expression of awe on the siren woman's face. This little scrap of luxury I consistently took for granted obviously meant the world to her. And as we finally got on our way back up to Rickety House, I couldn't help but anticipate what it would be like when she discovered shoes. For now, I would just have to settle for the moment Horace and especially Shay caught sight of her.
Oh, look at you!
Shay giggled and then flounced up to Nova so she could inspect the siren woman's sartorial choices.
You look very stylish and interesting.
Nova just nodded like she totally knew that, and then she made a beeline to where she'd left her makeshift handbags I'd crafted for her. We could start a new style in the market, Horace commented when Nova passed him on her way to the small kitchen.
Vella just might take you up on that. You better watch what you say.
Shay snorted.
You know how she's been wanting to take on a new project alongside Ryland's idea for the letter hook.
Ah, yes, the letter hook. Patent currently pending, that my son had engineered as a way to snag a message away from the ornery screechers as a clever way to avoid being bitten. He'd been asking the cockatoo woman about how to sell such an invention. And based on what I remembered from the conversation I happened to walk in on, Vella was quite the expert. I had no doubt that if Rylan listened to what she had to say, he could potentially become very wealthy. You know, that might not be such a bad idea, I said, as I piggybacked off Horace's flippant comment. Maybe that's what both Vella and Rylan need.
What do I need?
Rylan called out from one of the back rooms where he'd been poking around.
Some discipline, I barked.
And he ducked back into the room he was in.
Now, was that necessary?
Shay tisked. But the small smile hovering on her lips told me she was amused by my antics. It was, trust me, I chuckled.
Caw!
Rufus cawed and flapped back into Rickety House as we were just about to leave.
Screech!
Came the grating cry of Crackers, as if by speaking about the devil we'd inadvertently summoned him. It figured.
Rylan, your little friend is here,
Horace shouted, and the kid finally stopped avoiding the room I was standing in and came out to receive the screecher.
Crackers!
He called, and brandished his forearm for the creature to perch on, and the yellow and orange pterosaur listened for once and actually landed on the kid's wrist.
Good boy!
Then Rylan reached into the small pouch hanging around his waist like a fanny pack, pulled out a nugget of something meaty, and tossed it to Crackers, who immediately snapped it up. It seems as if you're getting better at controlling him, I commented, and Rylan perked up a little.
Yeah, he's rather unruly, so I've tried to get him to behave a little better,
he said as he took the message from Crackers and handed it over to Horace. Well, good work so far, I said, and was pleased when he smiled a bit. Even though he was definitely still in trouble, I didn't want to kick the kid while he was down. Now, let's blow this depressing place already and get back to the Manta ship. Is that what you've decided to name her? Horace asked as he skimmed through the letter Rylan handed him. Yeah, Amanta is, I started to explain, but then I was rudely cut off by the Falcon Man's exaggerated gasp.
Sorry, Chief, but in light of this latest news, I kind of don't care, he said.
And I would have been mildly offended had he not shoved the thing in my face.
Amaya and Anwar?
My eyes rapidly skimmed the letter as a ball of excitement expanded within me.
But according to this, they'll be here tomorrow morning.
Yes, hopefully,
Horace said, as we all poured out onto Rickety House's narrow balcony. The harbor is just beyond the largest quarry, so less than a half day's flight in the Manta ship. See, you were listening, I teased, and knocked my shoulder into his. So what's the plan, H? I don't think all of us can make the trip on the back of Law, Ozzy especially. I stood with my arms akimbo and stared up at the airship hovering only about 100 feet away.
Unfortunately, Lard needs some time to rest, and Shaylee, she could use your attention when you get a chance,
Horace said and took a small mirror out of his pocket.
Did something happen when we left the poor dear alone?
Shay asked with a concerned frown.
I really do feel awful about that.
From what you told me, you didn't really have a choice, sis, so don't feel too bad,
the Falcon Man said as he fiddled with the mirror.
La is fine. It just looks like she has a crack in one of her calloused wings. Nothing to hinder her flying, but it has been bothering her.
I'll see if I can whip up the old remedy I use for my canterflies when they have wing chafe,
Shay said.
That ought to do the trick.
Sounds good, Horace said, as he used the shiny little tool to catch the sun so he could signal whoever was in the wheelhouse.
For now, we'll just let Bowden and Miss Velly lower the Manta so the airship will come to us.
Good thinking, I said. And I smiled at Nova and wrapped an arm around her when she sidled up next to me. How are you doing, honey? The pensive siren woman didn't say anything as she watched the massive Manta ship start to lower itself toward us. And I desperately wanted to know what was going on in that head of hers. Was she truly happy to be leaving? Even though this place had treated her everything but kind. It was the only home she'd ever known, and I wouldn't blame her for feeling anxious. She glanced over her shoulder a few times like she was waiting for someone to come bursting out onto the balcony and tell her this was all just a prank. So I kissed the top of her head, because it was at the perfect height for me to do so. And I felt her sigh and leaned further into me.
"How's it looking, Mr. Horace?"
A man with a raccoon face peered over the rail of the circular wheelhouse located under the large flying structure.
"Looking good, Bode,"
Horace replied, and gestured that he could keep going. Bowden glanced behind him and said something to someone, no doubt Vel Rala, who was at the wheel. But when he spotted me, he grinned.
"Mr. Alex, it's good to see you again. What a lovely lass you have under your arm there."
"Good to see you too, Bowden," I said, and rubbed my hand up and down the siren woman's arm. "This is Nova, and she's part of our crew now." The raccoon man removed his trademark painter's cap and placed it cordially over his heart.
"Welcome, Nova."
Nova blinked her wide eyes and merely nodded a tight nod, and then she flinched slightly when Bowden kicked a rope ladder over the side. "Ladies first," I said, and handed Nova over to Shay and Zoe so they could talk her through everything. It took a little bit of convincing, but between the two of them, they got her to go along with climbing up the ladder. Horace, Rylan, and I watched from below, and I didn't take my eyes off all three of them until Bowden had gotten them safely over the ledge. "You next, bud," I instructed Rylan. And then after he was about halfway up, I gestured for the sloth man to go next.
"Okay, big guy, it's your turn."
"Ugh,"
Ozzy huffed and scratched his shaggy head with two of his three claws. And I would admit I was feeling maybe a little dubious about the ladder holding his weight. However, the ropes creaked ominously but held when he tested the ladder, and he made it all the way on deck without any problems. Next, I air-tipped an imaginary top hat to Horace.
"After you, my good Asher."
"Well, thank you kindly, Asher,"
he bantered back as he twirled an imaginary mustache and began to climb the ladder. Once he put his full weight on the bottom rung, however, there was a horrible snapping sound. And from the bottom third down, the left side of the ladder was now broken. Good goddess, H, I snarked, as we both stared at the ladder now dangling at an awkward angle. Seems like you've been enjoying Arvid's cooking enough for the both of us in my absence. Ha, bloody ha, he said, and shoved at me with his pointy elbow. At least I'm not all skin and bones like you. And so what if I eat a little more when I'm anxious? Horace, I'm just joking, I laughed, and clapped him on the shoulder. I'll let you spar with me so you can work off the extra weight. You better, he said, and flashed the mirror again to let Bowden know he needed to lower the airship a little more so we could reach the rest of the ladder. It's because of you I gained it in the first place, you absolute loon. So you're responsible for helping me get it off before Arnie notices. You're so vain, I snorted. You honestly think Anwar is going to care? She's just going to be glad to see you. Or, well, her version of glad, anyway. I frowned when the deadpan Ibex woman with the morbid sense of humor came to mind. And I wanted to laugh out loud when I pictured her in a Wednesday Addams costume, complete with pigtails and everything. Surprisingly, if Avantol had a version of the Addams family, Anwar would be a dead ringer for her. Mercedes, I miss her, Horace sighed, like the lovesick fool he was. And it made the whole situation even more hilarious. What you guys have is definitely special, I managed to say, without a hint of irony, and I was proud of myself for doing so. Thanks, Chief, he said sincerely, and I rolled my eyes fondly at my best friend. It was good being back around his light-hearted antics, and I was also glad that it seemed as if he'd stepped up to the plate and kept this place running while I was gone. Thanks for looking for us, I said at last, and he nodded his black-feathered head. Of course, he said, and then slung his arm around my shoulder. Welcome home. I grinned as the airship got closer and closer, and then my grin dropped into a frown. Is it just me, or is the Manta ship getting too close?
Nah, it's just the way it looks,
Horace said, but the way he trailed off didn't assuage any of my fears.
Optical, illusion, I think.
Yeah, no, that's definitely getting closer, I said.
Are you sure?
Horace tilted his whole body to get a look. But I yanked him backwards by the back of his collar, just as one of the solid beams supporting the sails nudged up against the balcony and caused it to immediately start crumbling.
Sorry about that down there,
Bowden called after the rickety house stopped making its awful groaning complaints. It shuddered on its shambling frame as clouds of dust rained down. And with one final moan, the entire back of the structure came to rest heavily against the airship.
We should probably go before this thing decides to kick up a death rattle, the Falcon Man said,
and I couldn't help but fervently agree with him. This place was literally on its last legs, and its demise was imminent at this point, so I followed him quickly up the ladder.
All well?
Bowden asked, as he helped me over the polished wooden edge of what we dubbed the wheelhouse of the Manta ship.
Not a scratch, my man,
I assured, and adjusted the grip he had on my hand so I could clasp his forearm properly. Thanks for the lift.
I'm afraid that was my fault, Mr. Alex,
Vela said, and I turned toward the helm to see her resting her hands on the lacquered wooden wheel.
I can only be so precise.
Then she placed her palm on the shimmering power source that was housed in the pedestal and concentrated without the need to close her eyes. Upon her willed command, the ship's sails rotated enough to catch the natural winds rolling along the plains, and it pushed the whole structure upward. With a devastating cracking and crunching sound, the Manta ship pulled away from the rickety house and took its last breath with it. Nova screamed in shock as she watched her old home fall into the lake in pieces.
Oh, dear heart,
Shay said with her emerald eyes filled with liquid sympathy. But before she could reach out to comfort her, Nova slipped around Shay and made a beeline for the cockatoo woman still behind the wheel.
You!
She said, and jumped over the console so she could examine Vela up close, and ignorant of personal space as usual.
What is the meaning of this?
Vela asked with an affronted little sneer.
You break rickety house,
Nova stated, and the exterior of her intense face was impenetrable. But I knew by now the siren woman wasn't angry, so I didn't intervene. However, I had no idea what it was she was fixated on,
so I stood by just in case she went super feral lagoon babe again. Velralla, however, was a woman who could hold her own, and without missing a beat, she glanced over Nova's shoulder and snorted.
"Good riddance,"
she said, and perched a hand on her hip like she was daring the siren woman to challenge her. Nova blinked, glanced back at the ruined house, and then whipped back to Vella. After another breathless heartbeat in which I really didn't know how this was going to turn out, Nova smiled so wide it made my own cheeks hurt just seeing it, and then she jumped off where she was hunched on the console so she could capture the cockatoo woman in a hug.
"Thank you,"
Nova said with a gleeful squeal, and Vella's white-feathered crest ruffed up in agitation.
"Heavens, child,"
she said with a blush coloring her face, and she awkwardly patted the siren woman on the back as Nova continued to squeeze her.
"Good riddance,"
she said.
"All right, yes, good riddance,"
Vella repeated, and gently pushed the enthusiastic woman away.
"And what in Mercedes are you wearing?"
All of us laughed good-naturedly, and more introductions were made, especially in regards to Ozzy.
"What a smashing reunion!"
came one of the voices I didn't realize I'd sorely missed until I heard its familiar tenor. "Mr. Jenner!" I waved at the koala man standing on the spiral steps, and he smiled back as his fluffy gray ears trembled with his reserved joy.
"It's good to see you, lad," he said,
and then did a brief zooming motion with his ever-present monocle, like he needed to get a better look at me.
"Although you look like you could use a wash and a good meal under your belt. And is that Osrid I see?"
"Hello, Jenner,"
the sloth man said with a polite smile.
"My, it has been a while, hasn't it?"
The older man chuckled and rocked up on the balls of his feet before he turned his twinkling beady eyes onto the siren woman.
"And who could mistake the lovely Nova we've all heard so much about? It is good to finally see who's had our Alex so bewitched."
"It was that obvious, huh?" I joked, and took Nova's hand so she wouldn't feel so put on the spot. "Well, she is pretty special, and you're right about needing some food. What's Arvid got planned? Hopefully something for our Okoba guest. Which reminds me, before we leave Ohm, we must stop by the forest people because I promised Elder Elmer I would give them some more tithe stones to make up for how Rylan and I crashed through the forest canopy and disturbed their water collection system."
"I'll make a note of it," Mr. Jenner said. "Maybe we'll be able to send Rufus on an errand. Honestly, anything to get the little pest away from that pesky creature of yours, Rylan." "Yeah, he and Gelf really seem to like each other,"
Rylan piped up, as he glanced around for said pesky creature. And when he couldn't find the strange little chameleon-like lizard, he puckered his lips and made a kissy noise.
"Gelfie!"
A pile of coiled rope suddenly transformed as the shape-shifting reptile revealed herself.
"There you are, clever girl,"
Rylan praised. And the slinky, gliding lizard shrank down a bit and then twined her way up his torso so she could rest around his neck. He cuddled the creature when she nuzzled his cheek, but then pulled back with a grimace.
"You stink! I'm going to have to give you a bath!"
Gelf made a questioning noise and tried to run away, but Rylan caught her before she could spread her wings by clamping a hand down on the middle of her back.
"Oh, no, you don't," he said. "You're not going anywhere."
Rylan then scooped her up so she was being held on her back like a little baby, and he marched toward the stairs with promises of soap and warm water under his breath.
"That sounds wonderful,"
Shay said as she examined her skin by holding her hand up to the light.
"A proper bath in our glorious spa room sounds perfect, and I bet Nova would really love to see it."
The siren glanced at me with a question in her maroon gaze, and I smiled back in assurance. "She's right, you're going to love it," I told her. It felt good being back on this little slice of Nada Isle and finally away from some of the insanity I'd been subjected to recently. And of course, like it usually tended to happen, right when I thought I could catch a bit of normality for a while, something rudely interrupted it, like a shitty red sky.